Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Today's episode of Step Into the Light addresses an intense and disturbing subject that is not appropriate for young listeners without parental supervision. As I introduce my guest, you may want to remove age-inappropriate children from the listening area. My guest today, Marlene Bagnell, is an author, speaker, and conference director. She has been actively involved in Christian publishing for over 50 years. Marlene has published over 1,000 articles in Christian periodicals and authored 5 books. She is the director of the Greater Philadelphia and Colorado Christian Writers Conferences. The subject of our discussion today stems from her book entitled #MyFamilyToo, How Our Family Coped with Childhood Sexual Abuse. Good morning and welcome to the show, Marlene.
Looks good to be with you, Patty.
Well, it's a blessing to have you here, Marlene, and I have read this book, and oh my goodness, there are just so many things that need to be discussed this morning around this subject. First of all, I want listeners to be aware that this book was first released several years ago and has recently been re-released. So the incidents that occurred in Marlene's family occurred many years ago. Back at that time, there were not the resources that there are today. However, her story is one that unfortunately has happened through the ages. So Marlene, if you would, let's begin by you just telling us, and I know it's been a long time, but if you can recall, tell us what happened when you received that first phone call. You had no idea what was going on prior to that. You received a phone call from your mom.
I had no idea at all. You know, when after Paul and I got married, we really didn't have a whole lot of contact with my mother or my stepfather or my little sister, who was 5 when Paul and I first got married. We didn't see them very frequently. And, oh, I think it was, goodness, our daughter was 5 before they even visited the East Coast for the first time. And things seemed funny. You know, my sister obviously had problems, had some emotional needs, but you know, with living 2,000 miles apart and not having a lot of contact, we really didn't know what was going on in their home. But I just had this uncomfortable feeling that something wasn't right. Like I said, we didn't see them all that often and didn't stay that in touch with them. My mother had several nervous breakdowns, actually, after Paul and I were married. And we went home. I remember the first time that we went home, she was in the hospital and she was actually restrained. And my stepfather was there with me and he was laughing at her. And I never felt such rage in all my life as I did at that moment. And so Mom, you know, obviously something was wrong. You know, what do you do, Patty, when, you know, in your gut you feel like something's not right, but you don't know what? I mean, obviously I sure prayed a lot. But, you know, when I think of your whole theme of stepping into the light, we were starting to move into some really dark times in our family. And yet, when I finally got that phone call, it would have been the last thing from my mind. I mean, and I've never forgotten when that phone rang. In fact, what was interesting, though, and I didn't share this in the book, but before that call came, I was literally on my face on the floor before the Lord praying, just with a heavy heart, not knowing why or what, but just seeking Him and needing Him. And, you know, and I guess in a spiritual sense, I knew something was happening, was coming, didn't know what, and the phone rang. And, you know, there was my mother and my sister on the phone. And, you know, Mandy was saying, you know, I you know, please let me come and live with you. And it's like, huh, what on earth is going on? And, you know, when finally she said, you know, Daddy's been having sex with me, and I don't want to live with Daddy, not like this. And, You know, my mother was trying to make excuses for him. Oh, you know, well, you know, he loves you. Yeah, right. Not in the right way did he love her. And, you know, and the wonderful thing in all this, however, was that I knew that my husband would say, yes, she needs to come and be with us. It wasn't the kind of thing that I needed to, well, let me check and see if Paul would be open to this. I knew that would be my husband's immediate response, and it was. Of course, neither of us had any clue what we were getting into. Mandy was not quite 14 at that time. So, you know, even without that backdrop of what had happened in her life, taking an almost 14-year-old child into your home is not an easy thing. When she got off that plane, you know, we were waiting for her at the Philadelphia airport, and it was one of the most awkward and difficult and intense and confusing moments of my life. I mean, as big sister, I mean, I wanted to run and hug her and make things better. And between the look on her face and the globs of makeup on her face and the short skirt that she was wearing and just her whole body language, it was, stay away from me. So here was this child who had begged us to, you know, please let me come and live with you, to now acting like this was the last place in the world that she wanted to be. So on the way home from the airport, we, you know, we made small talk. We tried to make her feel comfortable. You know, how was the plane ride? Okay. Well, what did you think of flying for the first time? I don't know. I mean, she just,
yeah.
You know, how do you break through that kind of wall? But one of the most vivid memories, though, was when I actually helped her unpack. And I could see that her mother, my mother, had packed that suitcase. I mean, it was, you know, obviously a teenager would have just thrown clothes in, but everything was neatly folded and was mended. I mean, my mother was a homemaker. I mean, and so even the socks, I mean, my mother used to darn socks. When they got holes in them, you didn't throw them out. She darned them. And, you know, and so my heart just was breaking, because here was my sister sitting on the bed looking very belligerent and angry and resistant to, I mean, you know, I went to put my arm around her to hug her, I mean, and she just backed away, and it was like, oh, oy vey, what am I going to do? How am I going to reach her? And, you know, so I'm hurting for her, but at the same time, I'm feeling my mother's pain and heartache. I could picture her packing that suitcase. And but God is so good, because even at that moment, he showed me that where I needed to focus was going to be on Mandy, that I couldn't somehow split myself between trying to take care of my mother and help her through this needy time in her life, at the same time trying to take care of her daughter. I couldn't split myself that way, and I needed to focus on Mandy, and I needed to trust the Lord that he would somehow take care of my mother. And it was 5 really tough, difficult years. And, you know, and were they, you know, were this, if this were to happen today, I'm sure, I know that there are things we would do different. For the most important thing being, we would have reported this. And yes, back then, you just didn't. I mean, you didn't talk about incest. You didn't go to the authorities about incest. It was the best kept family secret that nobody knew. I mean, and literally nobody knew why Mandy had come out. My stepfather really used my mother as the excuse that, you know, well, she just couldn't handle Mandy, and she couldn't get Mandy to school, and so we thought she would be better off with her big sister. So it was all put on my mother, which wasn't at all fair. But back then, I mean, there were no resources, Patty, to turn to. I mean, now, thank the Lord, this is talked about. Thank the Lord, there are counselors that are skilled to know how to help people through these situations. There wasn't even a book about this when, you know, when Mandy came to live with us. And that was one of the things that finally, after Mandy was gone and married, you know, I felt compelled to write this book, because I felt so alone. You know, if I had known other families who had gone through this, that could have helped me to just from the standpoint of you're not alone. Other people have gotten through this, and with God's help, they've survived. Believe me, there were times during those 5 years I didn't know if we would survive because the crises kept coming, you know, in all shapes and sizes. I mean, many of them perpetrated by Mandy because in her insecurity, I mean, her parents and her mother had sent her away. Her mother had chosen to stay with her father, and she was the one that was blamed for what had happened. Her father, you know, had said that, you know, well, if you hadn't worn those sexy clothes, you know, and it's all your fault, Mandy. I mean, it was just a horrible thing to lay on a kid. It was not her fault.
If I can interrupt for a second.
Sure.
This started occurring from the time she was age 5. Did you not say that in the book?
I did say that in the book, and yes, yeah. When she was 5 years old, it was already happening, and
right.
Which I have a feeling that it started happening after Paul and I were married, and you know, and I no longer live there. It just made it too easy and too convenient because Mandy now had her own bedroom, and
right.
It just, you know, you think, Patty, that stuff like this would never happen in your family. It happens other places, and that's not the case. I mean, my friend Carolyn Rook, who has some information that we included in the back of the book, she has a ministry to encourage adults, parents, and grandparents to talk with children about sexual abuse, because the fact is that 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually molested before they're 18 years old. You know,
yep.
this problem isn't going away by any means. And back then it wasn't talked about. Thank the Lord it is talked about now. But we were very much on our own, except for the fact that I chose not to keep it a secret after Mandy came to live with us. From the standpoint that I turned to my church, I turned to my pastor and to his wife, and thank the Lord for Kurt and Barbara. Had they not been there for us during those 5 years, I don't know how we would have gotten through the crisis. You know, we went from one crisis to the next, like I said earlier, but they were there for us, and, you know, my best friend was there for us, and our church surrounded us with love and with concern and with practical help. One of our church members was a lawyer, and he came to us. I think Mandy had only been with us maybe a month or two at that point, and he said, you know, Marlene, you're going to need to get legal custody of your sister. You know, that's going to be important in terms of being able to take care of her, being able to get medical care for her, to make decisions for her. And he took the initiative to put that whole process, you know, into happening. And I thank the Lord for that man. You know, he didn't charge us. He just was there as a Christian brother to say, I want to help you. And gratefully, at the very beginning, we did turn to professional help, to a counselor, and we found one in the beginning who was incredible. I mean, this lady actually went with us when we went to court to get custody of Mandy. She was there with us. She was so supportive. She was so understanding and caring and loving. And then she left the practice. And I'll tell you, Patty, from then on, trying to find a professional counselor, psychologist, psychiatrist who could help was incredibly difficult. We had some people that did more harm than good. We had one counselor who actually said to Mandy, have you imagined yourself having sex with Jesus Christ? I was like, oh. I mean, she came out of that building after that session and was sobbing hysterically. And she says, please don't make me go back there, please. And so finding good help, finding people who know what they're doing wasn't easy back then. People didn't have the training. We, you know, we just kept this in this, this isn't happening. I mean, I guess it was denial. I don't know. But the professionals just weren't there 40, 50 years ago who could stand with us, and I guess it was 45 years ago, and provide the appropriate help that we needed. And that's not the case now. So, you know, for anybody who's listening, you know, if this is happening in your family, or if you sense, like I sense, that something was wrong, but you don't know what, you need to begin investigating. You need to begin asking some questions. You need to be there for the child who, you know, seems withdrawn or confused or, you know, is acting out in other ways. I mean, it might be in terms of, you know, their behavior, their schoolwork. You might see a sudden change in a child. You know, do some investigating. Ask some questions. Be there for that child and talk to professionals, you know, who can give you guidance. I mean, the tricky thing there is, and the law now is that if you become aware that you know, it's not just a guess, you're not just wondering, but if you become aware that this really is happening, if a child reveals this to you or somehow you stumble on it, it must be reported to the authorities. That wasn't the case back then. I mean, and I'm grateful for the protection that gives children, but then sadly, I think too often what happens is children end up in the whole child care protective system and in foster care, and sometimes, sadly, that foster care is not good foster care. And so, and that's why I called this book hashtag My Family Too, because I think very often what happens is the extended family steps in to help, and we need to be willing to do that. It's, I can assure people, it's not going to be easy. I mean, we had just one other child at that time, or wait, no, I guess Debbie was already, yeah, Debbie was an infant, and
yeah,
like I said, this was a long time ago. So we had two other children, and Sharon was then about 8 years old. I mean, and she didn't, you know, we told her, not graphically, but that, you know, Mandy's father had done some things to her that, you know, good daddies don't do to their children. And kids are so savvy today, and back then even, that she understood, she knew. You mean he had sex with her? I mean, and I was like, at 8 years old, you know about this stuff? I mean, we didn't tell you. So, but it was awfully hard for Sharon, Donna in the book, to know how to be a friend to Mandy, because from Mandy's perspective, our daughter was a threat to her. She, you know, Mandy wanted to be, you know, first place. In fact, our pastor, who actually gave Mandy some of the best counseling that she ever got, had said to her at one point that, you know, Mandy, you're not the only birdie in this nest. And I can't thank the Lord enough for a pastor and his wife who were willing to spend to our lives and live this out with us and be there for us. You know, it just, what a gift. I mean, and my encouragement there to people would be is, you need to be part of a church family where you won't have to walk through the crises of life alone. And I'm grateful. Our church was a relatively small church. If it was a large congregation, I don't know if we would have gotten lost in the numbers or whatever. But God just saw to it that we had a pastor and his wife who cared enough to be involved and to be there for us. And so it meant they got lots of lots of phone calls and lots of reaching out to them, but they chose to keep loving us and supporting us and encouraging us, and thank the Lord for that. You know, we weren't alone during these 5 years. They were tough years, very, very tough years, but God saw to it that we had the people in place around us to encourage us and support us and cheer us on. One of the, you know, we actually even said to Mandy on numerous occasions, you know, you don't have to test our love. There is nothing you could do that would make us so angry that we would send you away. You are here for the duration, okay? So you don't have to keep testing us. But she did. Oh, I mean, and there were times it was like, oh, you know, we're so tired. We're so overwhelmed. But we kept loving her. I'm so grateful that, and it was God's love through us
because I don't think my mind would have gone far enough when, you know, one of the times that was very painful for our younger daughter was that Mandy had gotten a hold of cigarettes and then she hid them in Sharon's dresser drawer. And to make us think that Sharon was smoking, it's like, you know, oh, you know, this is, Mandy, you're trying to tear our family apart. I mean, and, but we knew that we had to keep loving her. We had to keep reassuring her that we're not going to send you away. And we didn't. You know, she finally left when she got married. And now from the standpoint of listeners, I should say, because obviously they haven't read the book, Mandy's now home with the Lord, which is why I'm now able to use my real name rather than the pseudonym that I used years ago. She's home with the Lord, my stepfather. And actually, this may blow some people's minds, but my stepfather, I believe, is with the Lord. We saw a thing after we had gone home when my mother had called and said, you know, he's in the hospital. The doctors are saying this isn't good. Please, you need to come home. And we did, and Harry did die at that point. And when I was cleaning things out in the house afterwards before the funeral, I found this little booklet, and it was a rebirth booklet, and he had signed his name to it. He had accepted the Lord, and I believe that Jesus forgave him, but I don't think Harry ever forgave himself. And I don't know if he would have died as young as he was, you know, of heart issues, if he had made peace. He never made peace with his daughter, which was tragic. Every time they would come and visit, it was, the tension was awful. And the letters he would send her in between time, I mean, one time he wrote her and he said, as far as I'm concerned, you are no longer my daughter and I am no longer your father. And, you know, he just, so many hurtful things. But he is now home with the Lord. And I believe that he reached to the Lord and the Lord did forgive him. And my mother is now with the Lord as well. So I'm able to talk and write about these things openly now. But it sure was 5 difficult years that we were in darkness. But God kept giving us glimmers of light through the love and the support and the encouragement of friends, of our pastor, of the lawyer who helped us get legal custody, of some of the counselors who were good, some who weren't. You know, God is faithful, and one of the things that I did in this book is at the end of each chapter, I tried to then share what God was teaching us during this time, because we weren't doing this on our own. There's no way we could have done this on our own. We couldn't have persevered. We couldn't have kept loving. We couldn't have kept going from crisis to crisis except for his strength and his presence. And we need him. You know, there's a song, Breathe, I'm desperate for you. You know, Lord, I'm desperate for you. And we were desperate for him. And when that is our life situation, he doesn't turn away from us. He's there. He's the light that shines in the darkness, like it says in the first chapter of the Gospel of John. His light is the light that shines through the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. Praise God.
Absolutely. Well, Marlene, I knew if I just asked you a simple question to tell your story that I could just sit back and listen. And I so appreciate you sharing so much with us. But at this point, I am going to take a little break. I kind of call it a station identification type thing, if you will, to remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. My guest today is Marlene Bagnell. Marlene happens to be a very dear friend of mine who may not know it, but she has influenced my life in a lot of ways that she doesn't even realize. She's just a wonderful, wonderful lady. She is an author, a speaker. She's a conference director, and that's where I met Marlene when I started attending her conferences, which I dearly love. But today we are talking about a book that she published many years ago, but she has recently republished it, and it is entitled Hashtag My Family Too, How Our Family Coped with Childhood Sexual Abuse. During the first part of the podcast, she has been sharing the story, how the story unfolded in her and her family's life with her stepsister's abuse by her stepdad. I am going to refer you to my website, which is PattySheene.com. There you can find more information about Marlene. You can also find information on how to connect with her online through her website. She has a specific website for this book now, actually. But also I'm going to put on there some resources that she has in the back of the book for this issue that can be used today. Back at the time that this occurred in Marlene's family, there were not those resources, but now we have so many resources to draw on, and Marlene has cited some of those in her book, so I will be putting them in there. When you do go to PattySheene.com, check on the Blog Talk Radio tab at the top. There you will have a list of all of our shows, and under Marlene's podcast will be a more information. Well, under all of them is a more information tab, and that's where you will find this extra information. Marlene, now that you have given us the basis of what happened, there's some specific questions that I would like to address. First of all, you talk about how your mom had mental health issues. I believe you said she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder.
Right.
And you talked about that feeling that you had to kind of help her solve her problems. And then you realized that, no, she needs to solve her own. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That was tough. You know, I was feeling in some ways like I was abandoning her. And yet, how could I help her when I'm 2,000 miles away? And I didn't have any answers for her, Patty. My mother, because of her mental health problems, and she was borderline learning disabled, so she never even finished high school. She wasn't able to hold down a job. She was a homemaker. My mother could bake like no one I've ever known. Every Christmas, I still make her icebox coffee cake. I'm under orders from my family to make that. And so that's what she knew. She knew how to be a homemaker, and now her home has been torn apart. I mean, and she's being blamed. But I didn't have answers for her. I couldn't solve this for her. And you know, and back then, I mean, the thought of even, you know, turning Harry in and telling the police, those were things people just didn't do back then. And you know, and of course she begged us, you know, don't tell anybody. And so, you know, I tried to keep regularly in touch with her with, you know, with letters. I mean, that was back before the days of the internet, and even if we'd had it, she wouldn't have figured out how to use a computer. So, you know, I tried to write frequently and send her pictures and keep her aware of, you know, how Mandy was doing and, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, and I kept all those letters. They're still actually out in my garage in a filing cabinet. Maybe someday I'll dig through them. I don't know. I mean, it was a painful 5 years without a doubt. And yet we kept getting glimpses, like I said earlier, of his light shining through that darkness. I mean, we never got to that point of total despair. We came close a few times. Especially, I remember one Christmas that they came for a visit, and the tension was just so thick. And actually, there was a candle. I had candles lit, and I don't like candles anymore, it seems. But a candle had tipped over near our thermostat and had started to burn the wall. And we got it out right away before there was a fire. But, you know, I put a big picture, you know, in front of it afterwards. But, you know, that was there. That reminder was there that this was not an easy Christmas with them. And one of the things that our pastor and the counselor we were seeing at that point had insisted on, and I'm glad they did, was that Harry and my mom should not be staying in the same home with us overnight. They needed to get a motel. I mean, oh, they were angry about that. You know, we can't afford that. We don't, you know, why can't we stay here? And no, you know, Mandy's counselor says that it's important that you not stay overnight. And so, I mean, you can imagine the tension that created in our home that Christmas. But again, we got through it because our God is faithful. And the hardest part then was trying to put the pieces back together for Mandy afterwards, because after their visits, which only were like once a year, and after the letters that her dad would send, she would act out and we would have to try to talk her down from, you know, the heartache that she was experiencing. And I couldn't fix it for my mom, Patty. I mean, I wish I could. And I think that's one of the reasons, though, that after Harry died, and Mom, you know, had nervous breakdowns during those years that we had Mandy here, we brought her out to the East Coast to live here. And she, the process actually started with us putting her in a mental hospital for evaluation. And that's when they discovered that she also had multi-infarct dementia, which is similar to Alzheimer's. So we were dealing with bipolar, and we were dealing with multi-infarct dementia, and how to determine which was which and what kind of medication and whatever. Just as we took care of my half-sister for 5 years, we took care of my mother for 5 years. And part of that time, she actually lived with us. But I think that was when the Lord finally took her home, I had such a sense of peace that I had done everything I could to love her. And during those last 5 years of her life, to be there for her, to love her even when, I mean, I believe that everybody needs to have at least one warm hug a day. And I would go to hug my mother and she would push me away and say, "I don't want you to hug me." And she was a very angry, bitter woman. You know, life is not easy. Life is not easy. This is why we need a savior.
Yes, it sure is. Well, Marlene, something that you stated in the book, and boy, this resonated with me because I was kind of in a similar situation. You said you went to see your physician. You were having, I mean, you know, needless to say, and not surprisingly, you were having a great deal of anxiety and some health issues going on, and you were prescribed some medication. You felt that taking pills made you feel like a failure as a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit about that mindset that you had.
Well, you know, and I think maybe more so back then than today, that was often what you would hear in Christian circles, that, you know, if you're a Christian, you just need to depend upon the Lord. He's giving you his promises. You have the Bible. You know, you have prayer. You know, you don't need all this other, you know, and you certainly don't need a pill. And I think that was the mindset back then. And sadly, I think sometimes it's still the mindset today. And that's tragic. That is tragic because God has provided medication and physicians and doctors and psychologists and psychiatrists and counselors, because we need that help. But that doesn't mean that we're failing as a Christian. Yeah, back then I did feel like that was an admission that I didn't have enough faith, that I wasn't trusting God enough. But there was a very wise, in order for Mom to get the lithium carbonate and other things that she needed to keep her relatively stable, because without medication, she was off the wall, okay? She had to see a psychiatrist. I think we went maybe once a month or every 2 months, I forget. What was great was he would spend 5 minutes with my mother, and then he'd spend the rest of the session with me. And I remember him saying to me, "Vic, Marlene, it's like you have all these balls up in the air that you're trying to juggle, and you can't. You can't juggle them without help. And it's not an admission of failure that you can't coordinate and manage all of this." And the bottom line is, if you don't take care of yourself, who is going to take care of your mother? And so he really, between him and, again, my pastor, it finally got through my thick head that it was okay to take medication, that didn't mean that I was somehow, you know, an inferior Christian who wasn't trusting Jesus enough, that this was a tool, this was something that God was providing for me to help me through this. And I would encourage any listener, you know, if you're struggling and overwhelmed, especially now during this pandemic, get the help that is available. It doesn't mean that you're failing. I mean, you know, if it was a physical problem, of course, we have some, I guess, Christian scientists, too, that feel like, you know, well, God will heal you. And our God does heal, but our God uses medical doctors and nurses and medications. So we've been so foolish with a lot of our theology, and I'm so glad that he finally got my head straightened out and I saw how stupid it was that I was refusing the help that was available for me.
Yeah.
Patty, what happens is we listen to the wrong voices. You know, and there's a lot of things that are said supposedly by Christians that do not at all line up with the loving God that's revealed in scriptures. And so we need to be discerning, and we need to have wise people around us and listen to the right voices.
I agree with that 100%, Marlene. I wanted to mention a couple of other things we talked about in the book, and this is so sad for the abused child. Mandy had so many ambivalent feelings toward her dad. There's one point when he wanted to come out to visit, and she basically said, I don't want to see him, and yet she had so many guilt feelings about, he's my dad, and I should want to see him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just got to be really difficult. And another thing that is very interesting, but again, it's very sad. He or she had experienced all of these sexually inappropriate interactions, and yet she sought them out in a way. You talk about the time when she's encouraging the boys down the street to do some inappropriate touching and this kind of thing. You'd think that a person would shy away from anything like that, and yet they lean into it. And that's a very sad part of the dynamic of the whole situation.
Yeah, you know, and again, for a child or an adult who has been abused, if they don't get help, their life may never be on solid ground. You know, gratefully, with all the counseling and support that we gave her, that our pastor gave her, you know, Mandy did end up married and have four boys. But for some girls, they either, like you said, will lean toward these inappropriate situations because they feel they're already, I guess, spoiled goods, whatever. Or they'll want absolutely nothing to do with a man. And now in today's world with the LGBT, I mean, there is such confusion in our world where sexual issues are concerned. Yesterday morning I was out. I went and got my flu shot. Listeners, get your flu shot this year. It's going to be important. But I had the Christian radio on, and I was absolutely shocked. They were telling the story of a gender reveal party and thinking that this was so cute because the little girl, whether it was a brother or sister who was revealing who he really thought he was, she fell apart because it wasn't who she wanted him to be. And they thought it was a cute story. And I was like, oh, I mean, the confusion today about sexuality is, I mean, the devil's just having a field day with this. And lives are being destroyed. And so, yeah, for Mandy, I think there was so much confusion. And like you said, she wanted, part of her would want to see her father, would want to get a letter from him. And another part of her, you know, was just, wanted absolutely nothing to do with him, but then felt guilty about that. And, of course, she was told it was her fault. And we kept saying, you know, I said, Mandy, I said, you could have dressed, you could have danced in front of your father naked, and he would have had no excuse to justify what he did to you. You know, I don't care. And what you said, what you ever did, it was not your fault. You were the child. He was the adult, but not acting as an adult. And again, I mean, I think it just points up the desperate need for solid professional help for people who have gone through this. And not just for the child, but for the family that's trying to help them, because we were clueless. You know, I'd never lived through anything like this. I didn't have answers. So I needed good you know, good help to know how to help her, which again was what my pastor and his wife provided. And but Father, there are so many kids today that are enduring this, and I just, Lord, I just pray that you will bring people into their lives who can love them, who can support them, who can encourage them, who can affirm them that they aren't bad, that it's not their fault. Lord, please bring healing. Oh, healing is so needed, Patty. It really is.
It is. I agree. Well, something else I wanted to discuss with you too, Marlene, was here you were. Oh, my goodness. I mean, you were in the midst of so much. You know, through all of this, there were issues. There were things that you brought up in the book that Paul had situations where he lost his job through no fault of his own, more than
mm-hmm.
once. And you were in dire financial straits, and you were dealing with all of this emotional stress of dealing with Mandy and with your little girl Sharon, and then you had the baby Debbie as well. So
yeah,
you had so much going on. But in addition to this, this kind of blew my mind. I don't know if you saw a TV program or something about needy children in other countries, and you said, I've got to do something. And you organized this craft bazaar. You know, looking back on that, would you encourage people, maybe you would and maybe you wouldn't, I don't know, would you encourage people to say, hey, wait a minute, God has given each of us a mission. You can't do it all.
Yeah. Well, you know, but, you know, I think we can have this, you know, I am woman, I can't.
Yeah.
You know, and it is true that Scripture says I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But in the Living Bible, it says I can do everything God asks me to do with the help of Christ who gives me the strength and the power. Kind of a different slant on that passage. And, you know, and I admit I often did get in over my head with things, but I also had the common sense at one point. I had been chairman of the Christian education chairman of our church when Mandy came to live with us, and I resigned from that. I had the common sense to know that this is stretching me farther than I'm able to go. And one of the things that I'm so grateful for with this new version of my family too is a friend of mine who is a counselor. She went through the book and noted page numbers, and then her response from a psychotherapist's view of, you know, what was happening here. And I'm so grateful she did that, because, I mean, in many ways, my family, too, is the story of how our family muddled our way through crisis after crisis, doing the best we could do, but mm-hmm. God always being there as the Redeemer, as the Savior, as the Enabler, as the one that gave us the strength that we lacked. But in terms of that hunger bazaar, that was back when Debbie never slept through the night for 2 years. She was breastfed till she was 2 years old. I had my family saying that she's going to be going to kindergarten, coming home and breastfeeding. But at that time, well, we've always had famines. We've always had world hunger as an issue. But sadly, we can block so much of that off of our radar. And I think we do tend to block things off our radar when we've already got more to handle in our own strength than, you know, I can't think about a world away where children are starving. But there was a book that I don't even know how I got my hands on it, but it was written by Stan Mooningham, who was the president of World Visions. And the title of the book is, What Do You Say to a Hungry World? I'd encourage listeners to get that book. You know, through abe.com and other places online, you can get books that have long since been out of print. But What Do You Say to a Hungry World? And I've never forgotten Stan saying in the book that, you know, once you have held a child in your arms who is dying because they don't have enough food to eat, all the other issues pale in significance. Incredible man. In years since, I now have met his daughter, who's a friend of mine, and Stan made a huge difference as president of World Vision, and I was so captured by what he said in that book. I mean, and as I would breastfeed Debbie in the middle of the night, I would think of women, how would I be feeling if I myself was starving, that I didn't even have the milk to keep my child alive? And I felt compelled to do something about it. And I'm grateful that I did. And I think it was a good thing for my entire family, because it took the focus off of just us. I mean, sometimes we can be in so over our head with the problems that are right in our face and so unable to cope with them, that sometimes I think we need to reach outside of that to other problems. It's like our own problems shrink in significance when we see the bigger picture. Does that make sense? And so I think it was a healthy thing for Mandy and for Sharon and for Debbie, who was, I don't remember how old she would have been at that point. You know, I would do craft meetings every week. I held craft meetings, and there were women from, I think, 17 churches that got involved, over 100 women. And we made handcrafts, and from the work of our hands, we wanted to provide funds for women whose hands were empty, who didn't have food in their hands to give to their children. And we raised almost $4,000 through a day-long bazaar near Christmas time. And I think it impacted our kids. I think it was a healthy thing in the midst of all the yucky stuff that we were dealing with and that Mandy was facing. I think it was a healthy thing for her to look beyond herself to the needs of other people and to realize that even as a child, she could do something about that.
True. It's kind of sad. You're right. We put so much emphasis on ourselves and our own problems that we it's easy to ignore the big picture. But that caught my attention. How many people have I had on the podcast that have these ministries? And I feel like, oh man, I'd love to get involved with that. And I'd love to be part of this. And you just can't do it all. You just can't.
No, you can't. And I think that the key word there, Patty, is focus. And mm-hmm. and prayerfully we focus. You know, Lord, what is it that you're laying on my heart that you want me to respond to? Because I can't do it all. And in fact, one of the things that happened after, you know, those 5 years of raising my sister and then the 5 years after, you know, years later of taking care of my mother, I began to move from being incredibly involved in the ministry of my church. I mean, if the doors were open, I was there and I was probably in charge of it, okay?
Right.
But it came to a point where God totally switched my focus, and I began saying no, the sanctified no, someone has called it, or Lorraine Snelling at one of the writers' conferences would have us repeat after her, no, I cannot do that. I am a writer. And, you know, and when I finally embraced the fact that, yes, I think God has really called me to a ministry of writing and of speaking, I began saying no to a lot of the opportunities in my church. You know, except for this year with the pandemic, I have been directing Christian Writers Conferences. This would have been the 37th year for Philadelphia, the 24th for the one in Colorado. And so between that and my own writing and speaking and mentoring and publishing books for other people, that's been my, quote, focus, my primary focus. And I think it's asking, you know, Lord, with the gifts that you have given me, and he's given all of us gifts, what is the primary place that you want me to be focusing on? You know, what is it that you're calling me to do? You know, and then, you know, devote yourself to that. And in the process, what it did, I think, is it gives other people opportunities to grow their own gifts. Because, I mean, I was the one that was basically doing it all in many ways in some of the churches that I've been a part of. And so, I mean, I gave opportunity for a ton of people to step in. it was going to take 10 of them to replace me, sort of thing. No, I'm just kidding. But I think focus is important.
You had mentioned your friend Carolyn. Tell us a little bit about her and what she's doing working with kids in this particular subject of abuse.
Carolyn's ministry is called the Rise and Shine Movement, and she is speaking to women's groups, and she's published now, I think, it three different books. There's one book, it's called Anna's Song, and it's for girls, and she has a Spanish edition, and she has an English edition, and there's one that can go into the public schools because it's for the general audience, for the secular audience, and then the other one is for the Christian audience, and then she's got the second book for boys called Bobby Gilliam, Brave and Strong. They're wonderfully illustrated and exceptionally well written, and on her website, which is riseandshinemovement.org, riseandshinemovement.org. You can go to that website, and the book is actually read to you as the pages turn, and it's incredible. And Carolyn just has such a passion for encouraging and equipping parents and grandparents to talk about it. I mean, I love this woman dearly. She's making a huge, huge difference. And it was a long time in the process. Now she's a voice that is really making a difference. And so riseandshinemovement.org, I would encourage listeners to visit her website for sure. And, you know, you can purchase the books, or you can, you know, actually listen to the books, you know, online with the children around you. So I'm very grateful for her, and grateful that my little critique group had a part in making them happen.
Absolutely. Yes, most definitely. Marlene, before we do say goodbye, is there anything else you would like to bring up that we didn't discuss on this subject that you wish I had asked you and I didn't? Or
oh, goodness, I don't know. Like I said, this was so many years ago that we lived it, but we did live it. We got through it, and I think our faith grew. You know, the bottom line is that when we feel closest to the Lord, it's not going to be on the mountaintop when everything is just, you know, now I am happy all day long sort of thing. And I think it's like even right now during this pandemic, I mean, I know that there are so many people who, you know, the pain of what it's close to 200,000 lives now have been lost, and the number of people who have, you know, lost their jobs, have lost their businesses, their livelihood, you know, and then I think of people who have had the COVID, but they're not recovering. I mean, I have one friend, and it's been 3 to 4 months, and
wow.
it just, we need the Lord, and we need to be reaching to one another, and, you know, yes, maybe you can't meet in person with people in the same way, but for such a time as this, God's given us the internet. I do Zoom critique groups with my friends, you know, with the team that works with me on the Colorado Conference. We get on Zoom once a month and for about 2 hours have this incredible time of sharing and praying together. And so this is not a time, even though we've been told we need to socially distance, no, we need to draw into one another in ways that are safe, and certainly we need to draw closer to the Lord, you know, and he promises in his word that when we draw near to him, he will draw near to us, and, you know, he says, let me have all your worries and cares, for I'm always thinking about you and watching everything that concerns you. You know, no matter what life may throw at us, God's not taken by surprise. And he is able to give us the strength and the resources we need to not just get through the thing, but to go through it and to grow through it. And I'm so grateful for that. I don't think I'd be the same person today had it not been for, you know, all the the struggles that we've gone through. But, like, I've tested the foundation of my life, and that foundation is Jesus Christ, and that foundation is firm.
Absolutely. And boy, I know from, well, I'm on your contact list there, and some of the emails you send us with the things that have happened, issues, and it's like, oh my goodness, you're just been such a strong person through your faith, Marlene. And like I said during the break, you have been a huge influence in my life in so many ways, and I feel very blessed to know you.
Oh, well, it's mutual, Patty.
Well, thank you. Well, Marlene, I can't thank you enough for all that you've shared with us today. I know this occurred a long time ago, but still, the dynamic is the same. I want to thank you for all that you have shared with us, and may God continue to bless you in your writing ministry, your speaking ministry, and I sure am praying that we can all get together back in Estes Park in 2021.
Yes. So that's yes.
What happened.
Okay.
Listeners, in closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. I would encourage listeners to go to pattysheen.com, PATTISHENE.com. On that website, you will find the Blog Talk Radio tab at the top. Click on that podcast, and under more information, you will find actually all of the websites that she has mentioned today, including Carolyn's website and the resources that she mentions in her book as well. So I'll be sure and get that all set up. Until next time, God bless you.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a glow.